Hello, what have we here?
Hey everyone, welcome back to Resistance Radio. It's episode 38. Hope you all enjoyed last week's show, because this week, it's all about, well, the news. As always, I'm Mikey B, joined by my co-host, Danya.
Hi!
And welcome back, Danya. You missed out last week when we talked about Darth Vader.
I did. I was so disappointed to miss out, but I wasn't feeling too great. So, yeah. But I'm back on my feet now, which is good.
That's good. We're glad you're on your feet. Unlike, you know, yeah. Vader, who got him cut off. Anyway, if you want to get involved in the conversation, you can get a hold of us here on Twitter at Our Radio Podcast, leave a comment on our Facebook, or send us an email through our website, resistanceradio.net. You can also leave a comment on this post when it goes up live on hypable.com. Today's podcast is brought to you by audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/resistanceradio. With over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player, get the latest Star Wars audiobook for free. And Danya, I know you just got this, because I just got this, the Catalyst audiobook. Have you had a chance to start listening to it?
No, I have not.
or have you read it at all?
I've read a little bit of Catalyst. I need to finish reading it. I really want to finish it up before I go and see Rogue One. Now that I've got the audiobook. Yeah, now I've got the audiobook, I might listen to it while I'm working.
There you go.
Learn
all about Galen Erso that way. Also, right now, just in time for the holidays, we have merch for sale. T-shirts and buttons. They are up on our website. And Donnie, what do you think of that merch that we have?
I love it. Funnily enough, I actually wore my Resistance Radio t-shirt on Casual Friday at work.
There you go. There you go. I know your co-hosts are listening to the show, so you guys can buy that. It's on sale right now, guys. also, Resistance Radio is looking for a few new co-hosts to lend their opinions and voice to our discussion about the Star Wars universe. If you find yourself wanting to argue with me, but really, who would want to argue with me? It's me. Or with Donnie or Eric, I get it. Send us an email at contact@resistanceradio.net. Anyone who's interested, if you are interested, please just make sure you have a microphone and a way to record yourself on your computer. And you guys can contact@resistanceradio.net, and we can talk to you about maybe coming on the show.
Yes, yeah? That would be exciting.
I know. I want more people. Someone tweeted at us about wishing MuggleCast did some things that we did. And I'm like, that's the one thing I miss about MuggleCast. I liked having three or four co-hosts. So I love it when Eric's on the show, and I love when we get Dano back on, or Evan from JodoCast. But I want some regular people on the show regularly. More. I love you, Danya, but I want more.
You want more of me? Well, I can try and talk more.
Can't be two more. Anyway, let's move on to the news. So, it's interesting. Rogue One rewrites are back in the news. Hollywood Reporter just had an article about Tony Gilroy, who was the person who did a lot of the Rogue One rewrites, and how he made about $5 million, or more than $5 million, off of Rogue One. Basically, Tony Gilroy, if you don't know, he is, he's probably best known for the Jason Bourne series and stuff like that. He makes about $200,000 a week for writing, you know, for spec scripts and stuff like that. So I wish I can probably be that type of writer. $200,000 a week, that's a good pay.
That would be nice.
Right? you know, right now, apparently he's made over $5 million on work with the Star Wars standalone film. Which tells me that they probably did a little bit more extensive rewrites and reshoots on the film. Which, in all honesty, you know, if you're working with it, you know, fine-tuning it that much, there's got to be, you know, it's got to be good. I'm excited for it, but...
I'm super excited. But, I'm never that worried about rewrites, because so many films...
It happens all the time. It's built into the budget. I get it. I think just the sheer amount that he's making off of it, though, for the rewrites.
It's probably just because of who he is.
It's who he is. But, yeah. So, Rogue One, first standalone film. And I get it. Like, this film has to go off without a hitch to really kick off the Star Wars Galaxy films and stuff like that. And, honestly, the more and more we see of it, the more trailers we see, the more everything... I'm so excited for this film. Like, I'm sitting there like, oh, yeah, this is good. Like, everyone I watch with, they're like, yeah, this is going to be really good. And, of course, Vader's back, too, which we talked about last week. So, I'm super excited for this, if you can't tell.
Yeah, I mean, considering how many tickets you've bought.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Let's talk about that real quick. I cut it out of last week's show because I had the story about you not being able to go see the movie because you bought it for the wrong day, Danya. But
I didn't buy it for the wrong day. Oh, I bought it for the right day. I just didn't have the holiday booked off for the right day.
Okay, yeah. See, I couldn't remember. So I'm like, you know what? I'm not going to tell the story because I felt like it'd be wrong since you're not here to defend yourself, me picking on you. So I edited it out of last week's episode when me and Eric talked about you not being able to go. But yeah, actually, before we go one further, tickets for Rogue One are finally on sale in the U.S. And for those of you who follow me on social media, I bought 47 of those things at 12:01. Now, let me tell you this story real quick. This is absolutely horrible. Like, I went to the bigger theater in town to try to buy them. I'm like, on their website, it's like 11:58. I'm like, refresh, still says I can't buy them. 12:01 hits, I hit refresh again, and the website doesn't move. It's just sitting on loading. I go, oh crap. And I bought a gift card so I can avoid like service fees. And so I'm like, I got to get these tickets. I need to see where we're at. I go to Fandango. Fandango's crashed. I'm in a queue to get into the Fandango website. I'm like, all right, well, I'm going to try to go through Fandango. I'm trying to go through their actual website. The worst part about it is you can only buy 10 tickets at a time through the Cinemark website or 9 tickets at a time through Fandango's website. So realize I have to buy 47 tickets. Like everyone at work is like, and this is like maybe 25% of if my workplace wants to go. So I have 47 tickets I'm buying, right? They're all paying me back. I'm going to be like Stewie from Family Guy and go, where's my money? But I'm trying to get these tickets and logging in. I'm just hitting refresh. I get the first 9, then I get the next 10. Then I'm like, I got 2 browsers going, 3 computers working on it. I finally like am hopping from computer to computer to finally buy them all. So by around 12:45, I finally get all 47 tickets. It was ridiculous.
That is a little bit ridiculous. Oh, here's the question, though. 2D or 3D?
2D. Seats are already assigned. So I will be sitting dead center in the middle of the theater. Row M, seats 17 and 18. So I'm right there in the middle.
Yeah.
I will see it in 3D at some point, but the 7 p.m. showing on the 15th is 2D.
I mean, it's not filmed in 3D. This is my thing. If it's 3D conversion, I tend to not go and see it in 3D.
Well, I tend to see a lot of the 3D conversion just because I have friends that work at Stereo D and the company that does most of the 3D conversion for these big films. And my friend actually worked on this film, so I'm going to see it just for her to support her, the 3D version.
That's fair. I'm also going to see it like a couple 3D. Times
anyway. So I love 3D. I have a 3D TV at home, so I love it. Anyway, moving on to news beyond me buying 47 tickets. I'm excited. See, I told you, you can't tell if I'm excited or not. Kathleen Kennedy doesn't think there's a woman director ready for Star Wars. Donnie, I know we've talked about this not on the show. So tell me your thoughts on this.
My thoughts are not fit for public consumption. Basically, I think it's a load of crap. I think there are several female directors who are far and beyond ready to direct for Star Wars. I think they are far significantly qualified to be able to do it. Far more so than some of the male directors who have had a shot at Star Wars previously. So, I think
the only person previously is J.J. Abrams, so...
Well, I mean, there were other people involved in the prequel films other than...
But George is the only one who directed those.
But there were a lot of other people involved in directing as well. Like, and being involved in the movies as well. But, like, just in general...
I'm playing devil's advocate against you right now. And you know
yeah,
that.
You are. It's ridiculous.
Know, here's the thing is, I agree with you 100% that I do think there are women directors who are ready for it. At the same time, I understand her hesitant, not just because, regardless of sex or whatever, if you're trying to change something, you want to make sure that when you do it, you're very cautious in the sense of not taken a step backwards. And I told, and like I told you, I don't want a women director to direct a film and not be, it be a great story that everyone's going to want to see, and it be another blockbuster hit, and it be like a Hulk film or something like that. And said, well, and then you have someone else say, well, it's no, it's not because of the story, it's because she directed it. And then now you're fighting all over again. So I get her hesitant a little bit about that. But at the same time, it's like, it's Star Wars. At this point, like, I'd be very surprised if there's going to be many duds from, you know, Lucasfilm and Disney on this.
But here's the thing about the Hulk, for example, and here's the thing about stuff like Fantastic Four and Josh Trank and everything that happened about that. It's not going to impact their career. They are going to move on and direct other huge films. In fact, Ang Lee has directed other big films since The Hulk, which was considered a flop. It's because the sheer number of male directors in the industry mean that they're not judged by their sex for whether or not a film is a success or a failure. It is purely down to whether or not they're a good director or not. And unfortunately for women, because there are so few of them given any chances, their numbers just aren't there in order for them to be able to direct. And so by not having them direct, you are perpetuating that same environment that means that there is a huge amount of pressure and expectation when one of them does get a director's role, because it's not prevalent, and because more people don't just think anyone can direct these movies. They put so much expectation on the fact that it's a female director that they set up that environment for themselves, and then it's the spotlight's on them for whether it succeeds or fails. And it's a lot easier to blame it on the fact that it's a woman if it does. But the thing is that there are women who are ready to do this and who are fantastic directors and should be given huge blockbuster movies and are very vocal about the fact that they want to direct them. No. But because we've set up this idea that every single film that a female director directs, it's down to them purely whether it succeeds or fails, and because they're just not given the opportunity, we've then set up this idea that they're just not ready, or they're not interested, or they need to basically succeed 100% of the time and never fail to be considered equally as successful as their male counterparts.
Yeah, I agree with you. My only argument against Ang Lee is, you know, he did a Hulk, which failed, but then his next film, which, you know, when you talk about hurting his career, his next film, he only got a $14 million budget on, which was considered a micro budget, you know, at the time, you know, 2006, and it was Brokeback Mountain, where he won 3 Oscars for it. So he himself, as a good director, broke his mold.
But then Brokeback Mountain, in regard to the kind of budget it would have required, and I don't think it's purely down to just Ang Lee in general and him as a director of that film.
That also got best writing and film of screen, you know, best screenplay. So, you know, I get it, but like I said, from
what
him,
I mean specifically about that film is the content. The content of that film specifically was always going to be a hard sell for a studio. It is a huge cultural phenomenon and is also essentially considered just a gay movie. So it was always going to be a hard sell for a studio in order to get a huge budget for that, because it's not considered bankable as a huge kind of
big green monster.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, but like, you look at the actual content of that film, it's a lot quieter, it's a very intimate movie, and mm-hmm. not, it's a romance, and the budget fits, the budget fits the kind of movie that it is as well. Whereas then you look at Life of Pi.
Mm-hmm.
That was a huge movie. So,
yeah.
Huge budget. More comparable to The Hulk than Brokeback Mountain is.
Yeah. But again, he came back with Oscar gold on that one, too.
Yeah. So
well, you know, so, he, so it's like, well, yeah, let's get Ang Lee to direct a Star Wars film. But, you know, it's off of the topic of what we were talking about. But yeah, like, I get it. It's just, I understand where Kathleen Kennedy doesn't want to just throw anyone in there. And I just want to make sure but I think they're also like still discussing where episode 9 is, where what's going past episode 9. You know, we talked about it last week, like, they're discussing what is the direction of the Star Wars franchise after episode 9. And I think that's, you know, once they figure that out, I'd be okay even with a female director not necessarily doing a film, but doing, like, helming a Netflix series. Because, not to say that, like, oh, they can't do a movie, but that would give them time to really develop story and everything and just, like, be a perfect proving ground, because you know a Netflix series is going to be darker, grittier, just like all the Marvel stuff, and it's going to be absolutely amazing. And be like, look, this is probably our most popular thing because it can bring in people who are not Star Wars fans into something else, you know?
But the other thing is that this is the thing. Why do they need a proving ground? Why?
They don't.
Why have we set it up so that they need to prove themselves?
Because that's they don't the need to prove. We're trying to change.
Yeah, but then exactly shouldn't someone like Kathleen Kennedy be putting her foot down and being like, "No, we're changing it." Full stop. She has the power to be able to do that. She has the influence to be able to do that. To just be like, "These women are ready. These women are waiting. They have incredible talent. So give them the opportunity." She is in the perfect position to do that. And yet, she's perpetuating the same culture and idea that has been there for years and will continue until someone who has a huge franchise under their control takes a stand and says, "These women are ready. These women are equally as qualified as their male counterparts, and they should be directing these movies."
Okay. Well, we'll have to just wait and see, because you're right, she is in the perfect position to be able to push that going forward.
Yeah.
Moving on, we also have some game news that we talk about here. Electronic Arts EA exec teased about a much bigger Battlefront sequel during their, what was it? Wasn't the quarterly readout? What was it? Was talking during one of their financial meetings. He talked about there's not going to be a Battlefield update for a couple of years, but they're actively working on a much bigger Battlefront. Which I wouldn't be surprised if Battlefront 2 is not only much bigger, much more exciting, but finally have that solo, you know, story mode, that campaign.
Story mode.
I feel like that's what everyone wants is, you know, it's like people like talk about the old Battlefronts, and that's what it had, you know, like, I feel like that's what we're waiting for. So we'll see. You know, they talked about how great the first Battlefront did, shipping over 14 million copies. Talking about the original characters, and we have all talked about how much we love Battlefront here. I wish they had a little bit more people playing the PC version, because there's not as many people on it. But Battlefront 2 should be something to look forward to. But there's also an expansion for Battlefront coming out. The Rogue One Scarif is being added. So that comes out sometime next month, December. So that should be coming out just before the movie. So that'll be nice.
It's going to be beautiful. It's going to be stunning. Yeah. Like all of the other content in Battlefront. It's going to be visually very, very beautiful. I just give me my story mode.
Also, Star Wars The Old Republic has an expansion this week. Knights of the Eternal Throne. We talked about the trailer. I think it was you and Mikal that were on when we talked about it. And so that is coming out this week. Early access is available currently right now to people who are subscribers for before. It comes out Thursday, I believe. Oh, Friday, the 2nd. Friday, for everyone else, so by the time you guys listen to this, you'll be able to play the expansion, and 9 new chapters of Knights of the Eternal Throne. I do know me and Evan from JodoCast have been talking about streaming it, so you might be able to watch us play through together on Twitch at some point, and definitely I'll tweet that out if it happens, but that's what our current plan is right now, to be playing the game together.
That'd be awesome.
Yep, you can listen to us, and you guys can join in, talk to us, and we'll probably just do a Skype chat room or something funny so everyone can join in. Just know that you'll be heard on Twitch. Yeah, so definitely new game news. Definitely fun time before Star Wars, right before going into the film. Did you watch this past week's episode of Rebels, Danya?
What was the episode? Jog my memory.
It was the Waithico. I'm looking it up right now, but it was the Star Wars Rebels. It was the one where Hondo and Ezra try to steal bombs and treasure.
No, I have not seen it. I was, this weekend was a little crazy, but I'm planning on watching it because I've also got the screener for the next episode, so...
Well, this is what we will do, is we won't necessarily do a full recap of it, but this past week's episode was it episode 8, I believe, is what it was. And it, actually, technically episode 9, but it was the 8th episode released, because remember, 1 and 2 were 1. It was the Waithico job. It was basically the ghost crew, basically really Zeb and Ezra, joined up with Hondo. And in order to break into an abandoned Imperial ship to steal valuable cargo. It was definitely one of those episodes where you're kind of like, all right, it's filler. You saw Ezra grow a little bit. He was not in charge, and Zeb was, and he wasn't comfortable with Zeb giving him orders. So it was just, you know, interesting dynamic there. Definitely, I'm more excited for next week's episode because there is an amazing trailer that we definitely have the link to so all you guys can see, showing Thrawn just being absolutely amazing. Did you get a chance to look at this trailer at least,
Danya? I did watch this.
So this episode, The Inside Man, that's coming out next week, man, it is awesome. Like, I will tell you, like, it just shows how calculating Thrawn is. You know he already knows this guy is working for the Rebellion, and he essentially forces him to kill himself. Like, it's amazing. Like, it just shows how ruthless he is.
This right here, this is the Thrawn I've been waiting to see.
You've been waiting all season for this. I know. It's like, you're like, oh my gosh. So, yeah.
This is what I've wanted of Thrawn since they basically announced that he was going to be part of this season of Rebels, is showing... He's such a character that, like, his demeanor is very calm, very calculated. It's very easy to underestimate him. But he's so ruthless, and he's terrifying because he thinks things through. He knows things. He's very, very, very smart. Very calculating. And so this is the Thrawn that I've been waiting for them to really showcase. Getting the little glimpses of him has been great in every little glimpse that we've got, but I've been waiting to spend like a significant amount of time with him so that we can really get into the meat of his character and who he is and really, really set him up as like the bad guy of this season.
The only thing that gets me about Thrawn, and I'll tell you this, and hopefully the book, you know, when the book comes out in April, we'll learn more and everything, but the problem with Thrawn is, where is he during Rogue One? Where is he during, you know, A New Hope and everything? Like, I am really, like, I'm so excited for Thrawn because I loved him in the EU, and we're finally starting to see him be the Thrawn that we all know and love. So it's just one of those things where I'm just... super excited to see him be this, but I want to know what happens to him. Like, I can't wait enough, if that makes sense. Like, I'm like, just tell me it all now, instead of, like, all these other episodes.
But, I mean, the thing with, like, all of these standalone movies is that while the main trilogy and the main saga is happening, that's not all that's happening. I mean, the Empire is a huge force that operates across countless worlds, and so it would be very insular to think that the only thing happening is what we see in the saga movies. That's a very, very small part of both the Rebellion and of their fight against the Empire. It may be the catalyst to the fall of the Empire and what eventually turns the tide of the war, but there are almost certainly other things happening at the same time. So even if Thrawn doesn't show up in Rogue One specifically, I don't think that's indicative of the fact that he's not in operation during Rogue One, just that he's probably in operation elsewhere during Rogue One, because there are other admirals and people who are probably in a higher position than he is, even though he is a master tactician and he is very good at strategy. He is probably being utilized in other battles and in other ways, while people like Tarkin, for example, who was very heavily involved in the building of the Death Star and all of that, and running the Death Star, is more likely to show up and appear in Rogue One and in the rest of the series because he was directly involved with that project. Mm-hmm. So
I get it. Yeah. I'm just waiting for him to show up. Although this kind of brings up, you know, completely side note on this. This also brings up that have you seen any of the news of people posting pictures from A New Hope? Every time you see an officer in a white outfit, they circle and say, "Is that Krennic?" You know, on the Death Star. And there's a couple of them that pop up. It's like, no, that's just another ISB agent. Could be. Maybe it's not. Krennic should have gray hair at this time. You know, who knows? But yeah. So yeah, so it's been popping up on the internet saying, look, he is there, but just, you know, in the background. Anyway, moving on. So this is an interesting one. I know you haven't had a chance to see this, Donnie, so I'm going to let you watch this while I kind of lead into it. So okay. Felicity Jones shot a video for Glamour magazine, basically giving all the Star Wars characters yearbook superlatives. And man, it's absolutely awesome. Like, you know, she says, you know, when they bring up Princess Leia, she says Princess Leia is the most likely, you know, at the end of the, you know, the school year, you're like most likely to do something, most likely to dance to Beyonce when no one's looking, is what Princess Leia got. Kylo Ren received most likely to regift a Christmas present. So it's definitely accurate. Worth taking a look at. It's really fun. And she says Chewbacca is most likely to gossip nonstop, but you can't understand him, so it's all right. He'll talk about you in front of you. But it's just fun. Like, it's just a fun interview. Like, it's a minute long. It's worth taking a look. Donya, if you haven't seen it, you should take a look at it now. I'll just pause the recording.
Jabba the Hutt is most likely to catcall a woman in the street.
Accurate. Jabba the Hutt would definitely be most likely to catcall. I agree. You know, it's like, Icha Tuta, you know, right there. What do you think about Jar Jar Binks? Most likely to get too drunk at brunch.
It's true. So true. Oh my god. I don't know that I'd agree with the Han Solo one. Least likely to get offended by a hurtful comment. I think Han would, like, ridiculously overreact, probably to the wrong part of the insult or hurtful comment, be honest.
But see, he wouldn't be hurt by it. He would overreact. He wouldn't be hurt by it. So, you know,
she said least likely to react to a hurtful comment, but he would definitely react. Just
probably the wrong way, though.
Yeah, he would definitely react and or overreact. But, you know, who are you calling scruffy looking?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, it's a fun little video. It's just cool to see, like, what she thinks about these different characters and everything. So, definitely take a look at it if you haven't seen it. We've kind of mentioned some of the good ones. Like I said, I'm a fan of, I can imagine Princess Leia getting down to a Beyonce song in her private quarters.
Yeah, I mean,
and as soon as someone walks in, she turns it off.
Who doesn't? Come on. Everyone ladies, gets down to a Beyonce song every now and again.
Exactly. let's move on. So, this is from Hypeable. Apparently, we have some news that an Obi-Wan Kenobi solo film could be coming out following the main saga films, which is good because you think about, you know, last year we had Episode 7, this year we have Rogue One, then next year we'll have Episode 8, then we'll have the Han Solo standalone film, then we'll have Episode 9. So following Episode 9, the end of that trilogy there, we don't know. You know, we were told it was a Boba Fett film. And that got canned because, you know, we talked about Josh Trank earlier today. But, you know, it'd be kind of cool to see an Obi-Wan Kenobi. I really would be excited to see Ewan McGregor pick up the role again.
Yes. Yeah. absolutely would love that. That would be so great. I want my Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon buddy cop movie. Like, come on. Give Obi-Wan me the adventures of Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan. Come on. Oh, I want geez. It. Why? Why that are you not giving funny. It to me?
Well, oh man, I feel like they should just do the adventures of Mace Windu and Obi-Wan or something like that and have like Eddie Murphy play Mace Windu and it'd essentially be Beverly Hills Cop all over again.
No.
You know, instead of the Beverly Hills Cop theme, it's going to be Star Wars there. So, I don't know.
But yeah, I do. I really would like to see an Obi-Wan solo movie, though, but I want it set before the Skywalker saga.
Well, before the Skywalker saga, so before...
Anakin.
For Phantom Menace?
Okay. Yeah. If it's, like, right before.
Have you watched Phantom Menace? Ewan McGregor was too young there. I feel like he needs to be, you know, I get it, you know, Qui-Gon, but I feel like he'd be too young for a buddy cop there. You need, like... honestly, it would be perfect to have, like, Clone Wars-style buddy cop between Anakin and, you know, Obi-Wan.
No.
Than Qui-Gon. But I love Qui-Gon as a character.
But it would, if it was going to be Qui-Gon, it would have to be before Phantom Menace.
Well, what if it was between Revenge of the Sith and A New Hope, and it be Qui-Gon's Force Ghost and Obi-Wan? So, like, he's the Tatooine Sheriff... With the ghost as a partner, it's old Ben Kenobi of the Judah Wasteland. Like, come on, like that's a Netflix show written all over it, right? You know, you think about it, it's a Western in space right there. And instead, you know, he can't use his lightsaber, so he's got a blaster. You know, starring, you know, this random droid, and when you know, he gets hit in the head at the end of the series. I don't remember owning any droids. You know, there you go. So. I've thought about this all of like 30 seconds, so I love that. What? Buddy cop, Obi-Wan Kenobi.
I want pre-Phantom Menace Obi-Wan. Right. That would be what I would want to see.
I would want in between, just because Ewan McGregor would be the right age for it, in between. But, you know, pre-Phantom Menace would still be fun. Like, honestly, I was pretty hesitant about the Han Solo film all the way up until they casted Lando Calrissian, I'll be honest. But, you know, like now that we see that we're having a young Lando, we have an Han Solo, you know, I'm excited to see where it can take me. Same thing with whatever they do with Obi-Wan, I'll be excited to see where it'll take me, mm-hmm. You know.
But then it also begs the question, because the reason that they're not apparently moving forward or sooner on an Obi-Wan solo movie is because they're not done with Obi-Wan yet in the saga films. Yeah. And that's the reason stated why they haven't moved forward with a solo film, is because...
I don't know how much credence I can take on that. Like, I get they used Obi-Wan's voice in Force Awakens, and I think they wanted to leave Obi-Wan open to do something else, maybe.
There are a subset of fans who believe the theory that Rey is Obi-Wan's granddaughter.
Yeah, that's wrong, though. It's Luke's daughter.
Anyway. Is that hashtag your Rey theory sucks?
You see how quickly I dismissed that? Like, I was just ready to say no. Well, you know, here's the thing. It's like, with Obi-Wan, like, we might see a Force Ghost of Obi-Wan at some point. You know, only in the EU did they say that Obi-Wan was no longer able to contact Luke in Force Ghost form. That's been retconned. You know, that doesn't exist anymore. So how do we know that Luke hasn't been hanging out, you know, on Ahch-To all this time, just, you know, chilling with Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon and, you know, his dad teaching him the ways of the Force, right? Like, we don't know this. You know,
he needs more conversation than birds. Birds, so, and at least one Luke Skywalker.
But that's my point. So we don't know. So it would be nice to, like, be able to see. And, like, there might be some revelation they're going to drop there that will then get explained in a prequel Obi-Wan film. So I think, definitely think they just kind of don't want to tie themselves into some type of story that they can't like rewrite themselves out of, because they already, you know, like I said, they already retconned all the EU from when they took Disney took over. So I would hate for them to say like, well, this wasn't part of the universe. It wasn't one shot. It doesn't exist. And it's like, they're not going to do that anymore.
Yeah.
They already got everything going. They have the story film group for this for a reason. But, you know, I'll be excited for it.
Yeah. But you really don't think there's any possibility whatsoever that Obi-Wan and Rey could be connected in some way?
I wouldn't. There is a possibility. You know, there is. The thing
it's
that
not
gets
as though
me, the only thing that gets me why I think not is reason I think not is because we see that vision that Rey has of her being left on Jakku. That's why I don't think so. Now, I will tell you, have you finished reading Aftermath?
Which one? The second one?
The second one.
No.
Alright, so here's the thing, is if you, alright, so for those of you, we talked about Chuck Wendig's writing. I know Mikal likes his writing style. To me, it's hard to get through. I mean, like, it's tough to read through. But Aftermath had some amazing information in it for us. I mean, like, just absolutely great information for us. And, you know, it's all about, you know, Snap Wexley, you know, him and his mom and stuff like that. So it's a good story. It's just, to me, it's hard to read. You know, the short sentences, you know, all that stuff, it just makes it a little bit difficult to read, writing style. But it's a good story. Like, it's a well-written story. The prologue, the very last bit. So if you want to flip to the very end and just read the prologue, it has nothing to do with the story that happens in
prologue Aftermath. Or epilogue?
Epilogue, sorry. Why did I say prologue? The epilogue. So if you go to the very back of the book, just read the epilogue. It talks about Jakku, and it talks about, and Palpatine is there on Jakku, and he's working on Jakku. Honestly, if it's not Luke's daughter, I feel like it might be Palpatine's daughter. Like, that I would be more, you know, versus Obi-Wan. Like, if you look at, like, what's actually come out canon-wise, if Rey is not Luke's daughter, I'd be more likely to believe that she is Palpatine's daughter. And
when would he have had... When would he have had her?
Or she's related to him in some way. You know, who knows? I don't know, but because he's already on Jakku, she gets put on Jakku, she's left there for a reason, you know, he was digging something up there, you know, we don't know. We just don't know enough. But it does, you know, the epilogue does set up a really nice, creepy scene of Palpatine and, Galen Rax, you know, at the end of the book. And you're like, ooh, why are they on Jakku? And it obviously sets up a whole bunch of things where we know there's the Battle of Jakku that happened at this faraway, you know, why on this desert world that has nothing there? Why
I just there feel like I'm there? Finn right now being like, why does everyone want to go to Jakku?
That's the point. Like, I don't know why it's all about Jakku at this point, but there's something buried there, something hidden there, something force thing that was there from thousands of years ago. And that's what all you're alluded to. Sorry if I spoiled the epilogue of the book, but, you know, it's worth just, you know, honestly, I would say, because it doesn't talk about, you know, this is completely separate from the rest of the book. It is a pure epilogue, like a backstory type thing. Flip it open, read that last, I think it's like 8 pages. It's worth checking out. But if anything, I would say it's not, you know, Rey's not Obi-Wan, related to Obi-Wan, more Palpatine or Luke.
Okay.
Luke for the obviousness, Palpatine for the, you know, curveball why Luke didn't want to teach her because she's related to Palpatine.
There are so many theories now because we don't have answers.
I know. We gotta wait another year, right?
Oh god, I know. It's gonna feel like the longest year.
It's gonna feel like a long year, but here's the thing. Yeah, see, this is why we're not doing a spotlight topic this week, or probably next week, everybody. Just because there's so much news and we can just talk about it for nonstop, I'm sorry. But it really, like, it's going to feel bad next year because we're waiting for episode 8 and you're going to rewatch Force Awakens a billion times, but we're also going to have Rogue One coming home and you can be like, let's watch, you know, all the movies, including Rogue One, which we may have a viewing party, part of Resistance Radio, and you guys can watch the movies with us and join us on Skype chat or something.
That'd be fun.
I know, right? It'd just be ridiculous. Downside is I'll talk through the whole movie. I'm sorry, everybody. But you don't have to join us if you don't want to. But yeah, you're going to have plenty of things to do in between episode 8. I just have to tell myself that. Plus, there'll be more books that come out and comics and all those wonderful things. So, yeah.
I know. There's a lot to look forward to in Star Wars over the next year, but also it's a year.
That's true. Now, I do want to move on story-wise. So, we talked about Rogue One not only getting rewrites, but Rogue One got a completely new composer. And I'm going to butcher his last name, even though I know who he is. So, I'll let you say it, Danya.
It's Michael Giacchino.
Giacchino.
Yeah.
See, I was going to be like something with an A, C, hard C sound there. I don't know. So, I'm going to just call him Michael, because I like that name.
Yeah.
If you can guess why. Anyway, so he was given only 4 weeks to score Rogue One, which is pretty impressive. Like, if you take a look at, he actually said, I saw the film and I really, really enjoyed it. So there was no lack of ideas or inspiration, that's for sure. The only worry the whole time for me was just the schedule. At the time, it left me with literally 4.5 weeks to write. But I mapped it out and I thought, okay, if I do this much a day and I get this done, this will leave me time to go back and improve if I need to before having to orchestrate. So, it looks like, you know, he was throwing something upon him and being like, hey, can you do this because they had the other person back out? Or we don't know what happened. Do we? What happened to
the spot?
Yeah.
No, I don't. I can't remember if we were given a reason for why he stepped down. But
yeah, and
we did learn
composed music.
We have learned that Giacchino didn't want to listen to the music that Desplat had already composed. He didn't want to listen to any of it. He wanted to come up with everything on his own. So he basically was starting from scratch with everything.
Which I get. Like, here's the thing. He already has to blend John Williams' famous score and motifs into this. Because, like, you know you can't have Vader on screen without the Imperial March. Even a variation of it, or start off exactly the same and then go into something different to fit the film. Like, you have to have the Imperial March with Vader. Like, that's him.
Yeah.
You have to have, even though we're not going to have the title crawl, you need to have something that is at least reminiscent of the traditional fanfare. And I get, you know, Desplat was great because, you know, I loved his, you know, Deathly Hallows soundtracks, 1 and 2. You know, so I was excited to hear what he did, and he already scored it. And I'm pretty sure we hear Desplat's music during some of the trailers, the first trailers that came out. Because it's not, you know, typical Star Wars music, and I'd be surprised if they had someone else score something for a trailer. So I think it's pieces of his music that he had written, but I understand him just not wanting to listen to it because he wants to start from scratch. You know, he wants to have his own voice there versus trying to blend two voices versus just one, you know?
Yeah.
But it is interesting to say it is a film that in many ways is a really great World War II movie, and I love that about it. So I'm not going to go any further until you guys can read the hypeable article written by Selena, but really at this point, here's the thing. This is the war gritty film, World War II style film that we all wanted Rogue One to be. So regardless of the reshoots and everything, the music, I am beyond excited. The soundtrack, the score should come out on the 15th or the 16th. Have we seen it? I looked at it on Amazon the other day.
Probably. Yeah. I'm not going to be listening to it until after I've seen the movie anyway. Because sometimes a lot of the cues in, like, soundtracks and scores can give away the expected feeling
how
scenes go.
Yeah.
So
yeah, it comes out the 16th anyway. So
cool. So it's after it comes out.
Yeah, it comes out the 16th. I double-checked on it on Amazon. So here's the thing. Is I'm going to see it on the 15th, and that night, after I talk about it with a bunch of friends, getting food after the movie, I'll be able to listen to it on my drive home at midnight, you know, to the house and stuff like that. So I'll be excited for it. So yeah, so that comes out on the 16th. So I'm excited.
Yeah.
Different. Last bit of news before we kind of jump into some discussion about Rogue One, I guess would be our spotlight topic of the week is Target has a new series of t-shirts available for purchase, which is their Force for Fashion And for each specially marked men's or women's Force for Fashion Rogue One t-shirt purchase through Target's retail operations, so either through Target.com or through at an actual Target store, Target will donate $5 to the U.S. Fund for UNICEF to support the UNICEF Kid Power Program. So that's kind of cool, right?
Donate
up to $1 million.
I love this idea. I love Force for Change anyway, but yeah, I also love these t-shirts. Holy crap.
Now, before we go any further, I do want to talk a little bit about them, because I actually was at Target. I saw these last night when they sent the email and everything, and I was going to buy one, but I decided to wait. You know, I figured I'd get one later, and ended up going to the store today, and I bought one today in store, and I'll tell you which one in a minute. But all the shirts were, I don't know if they're designed, because it does. I have to look up the email, but they all have someone's name on it. Like, they all have, there's a signature on who did it. Like, the Felicity Jones one is the one that says, I Rebel, and it's got, like, little X-Wings and the Rebel Alliance logo at the top. You know, and it's got a little, like, arrow type thing, R1, yeah. You know, Rogue One on it. And I'm sure somewhere in that design, which is too hard to see on it, it'll probably say Felicity Jones somewhere, like a small signature or even text. The Gareth Edwards one is a Go Rogue One, which, you know, is a typical t-shirt design. The one I personally purchased was the Diego Luna one. It's a kind of a bluer t-shirt that just says I Rebel, a bunch of in white text, and then in red text, and then the Rebel Alliance logo. And you can kind of see, if you click on that picture, big right underneath the Rebel Alliance logo before it says Star Wars, it says Diego Luna right on it. So that was his design. So I'm a fan of this. Like I said, you're supporting UNICEF by purchasing a cool t-shirt that you can wear. I may not be dressing up for Rogue One because I'll be coming from work, but I'll be wearing my UNICEF t-shirt to the screening.
Which is neat. I am dressing up for Rogue One.
I know. You should have an article coming out about that soon, right?
I should, hopefully, have an article coming up on Hyperbole, so I will make sure to link to that on the Resistance Radio Twitter account as well when it goes up, which awesome. Is exciting.
So, last week, me and Eric discussed this, and you haven't talked about it, Danya, and this is just a thought, and I know you're gonna post something on Hyperbole about this opinion. Do you watch Episode 4, A New Hope, before or after Rogue One? When you go see it. So here's the thing. You know, me and Eric were talking about this last week, and my argument was, you already know what happens in Rogue One, because it's the text that leads into, you know, A New Hope. So, like, you literally just, you know, that 30 seconds of A New Hope is Rogue One, if you will. At the same time, you know, does watching Rogue One kind of prep you, or watching Episode 4 prep you for it? Or does watching, you know, Revenge of the Sith prep you for it? What do you think, Danya?
Well, I don't think Revenge of the Sith will necessarily prep you for it. I think there's too much time between those two for you to be able to get, like, a good idea of the motivations and stuff of the crew in Rogue One, because that's basically the Empire as a fledgling, that's it, as it was just starting. Whereas it's fully realized by the time you get to A New Hope, Episode 4. I would personally watch A New Hope after Rogue One. Because I already know what happens in A New Hope. I already know what's going on in that.
You like me could probably repeat it verbatim. You know,
pretty much, yeah. So for me, I feel like Rogue One will then give me a new appreciation of A New Hope when I watch it again afterwards, because it'll very obviously have references, like, foreshadowing into A New Hope. So, I feel like watching it before may not help so much. I don't know. I feel like, in this instance, I would like to watch A New Hope afterwards, mostly so that I'm not constantly, or wouldn't constantly be looking for something, having had A New Hope so fresh in my mind.
Okay.
I'd want it with, like, at least a little bit of distance. I mean, I know the film pretty much back to front anyway. So that's really difficult for someone who watches the original trilogy as much as I do. So I feel like having just a slight bit of distance will allow you the room to breathe to appreciate Rogue One as a standalone film as well. And then if you come back to A New Hope afterwards, you can put all of the connections there then.
Okay. That's a very valid argument, I would say. For me, I'm probably going to watch it before and after. And I'm also going to read Catalyst before. I'm also going to watch, you know, Rebels up until the release of Rogue One. So I feel like I'll be very prepared going into Rogue One.
Yeah.
You know, being that really geeky guy who says, like, actually, Krennic was actually first introduced as part of the Republic ISB, Republic, security bureau, not the Imperial one. He was part of the old Republic, and he survived, you know. See, that's the knowledge I got from Catalyst so far.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah.
We're not going to go any further. Catalyst and Rebels is something completely different, because both of those take place before Rogue One and are in many ways going to be supplemental to Rogue One.
It's exactly it. It's this year's road to Force Awakens. You know, it's Road to Rogue One. You got Catalyst is the prequel book focusing on Jyn's family. And Rebels is taking place in that time frame. We've already seen characters that are in Episode 4, you know, like Wedge and Hobby, show up in Rebels already. So that's kind of cool, you know?
Yeah, so they all kind of connect into each other. But, you know, I don't know. Personally, I want to watch A New Hope afterwards. So it's almost like I'm giving Rogue One enough time to tell its version of the story rather than constantly second guessing it and being like fact checking almost while I'm watching it. So I want to give it enough room to breathe on its own without constantly being like, but what about this? And don't they have to connect it to this thing? I want to have at least enough distance without it in my mind from having, like, just watched it, to be able to just enjoy Rogue One for what it is.
I get that. That's exciting. I'm gonna do it the opposite way. I'm gonna watch it both. But that's me.
Yeah, which is fair. I mean, any way that you choose to enjoy your media is a valid choice. It's all down to personal preference. Like, I don't typically watch Star Wars chronologically. I don't. I usually watch, if I'm going to watch it start to finish, I watch the Machete Order, usually. Okay. But typically I just watch the original trilogy, and so, I've watched Force Awakens on its own a couple of times. So
this actually brings up an interesting question. So you said you just watched the original trilogy more often than the others, and I get that, like, it's classic. When you watch the prequels, do you actually always do it in Machete Order, or do you watch it, like, as its own, or when you feel like watching one of them?
Usually when I watch the prequels, it's almost always in Machete Order. I don't think I've actively watched the prequel movies without having sandwiched them between the original trilogy. Okay. Since I first watched the prequels when I was a kid.
Alright, I get that. See, for me, it's weird. Like, whenever I'm sick, Star Wars goes on. And it's always... It depends on how sick I am. If I'm really sick, I'll watch Episode 1 through 7 just in a straight go. Just because I know I'll have plenty of time to get through all of them. Mm-hmm. I don't do Machete Order because I've seen the Machete Order. I know the surprises. The whole point of the Machete Order is the surprise. At the same time, if I just am bored and I want to watch a Star Wars film, it all depends on the mood I'm in. And prequels count there, too. Sometimes I want something that's a lot of action, so I'll put on Revenge of the Sith. Sometimes I feel like, something a little darker, Empire Strikes Back. Sometimes I just want to laugh and I put the Ewoks on, you know? So it really just depends. Like, to me, it's like I watch them in any order just based on my mood. I have watched Force Awakens quite a bit just because, you know, it's one that I have on iTunes, so I don't have to actually get a disc or anything out. But it's just one of those things where I'm like, I feel like I like, you know, I like the music of Force Awakens probably more than, not, I don't want to say like than any of the music, but more than I like the prequel music. You know, there's a few standout songs, but Rey's theme and, well, Rey's theme, the scavenger theme is amazing to me. So like, I definitely, yeah, right. It's just amazing. So I watch the film just to listen to the music sometimes, obviously the film's going on too. But yeah, so there's just, it's weird to me. Like I watch the films at any time.
Here's the weird thing for me. Typically, if I'm in like the mood to watch Star Wars, or for example, if I'm not feeling great and I want to pick me up or I want to watch something, you know, the one that I almost exclusively gravitate to every single time?
Which one?
A New Hope. Yeah. I don't know why. I always put that
one on. I'll tell you why. A New Hope is the one I gravitate to the most. And for the longest time, it was my favorite Star Wars film. Then it was Return of the Jedi. Then it was, you know, Empire Strikes Back as I got older. But I always gravitate to New Hope. It's the same reason I always gravitate to the original Harry Potter book and the original Harry Potter film and the very first Lord of the Rings film. It's because it's the beginning of the hero's journey. That is my favorite story, and I can see it across multiple media, and that's why I always go to A New Hope. It's my favorite one. Like, one day we should just talk about the hero's journey in general.
I would love to do
like,
that.
That's why it always comes to me. Like, my fondest memories as a kid, and this is kind of telling you, is we had this brown couch when I was a kid. It was like a corduroy couch. It was a horrible couch. My mom got rid of it by the time I was like six, but I remember taking the seat cushion, sitting cross-legged, you know, to my back to the couch, and using the seat cushion in front of me at an angle, pretending I was in an X-Wing because I had an angled front. Like, that's why I loved A New Hope. Luke was in an X-Wing. It had space. It had this mysticism. It had the night. It had all these great things. And it's always the one I gravitate to. And when I'm sick, that's the one I usually go to first. Like I said, it just depends. If I know I'm really sick, I'll watch all six or all seven films now. But if I don't know how sick I am and I'm just feeling bad, it's always that one. And I agree with you. I just gravitate to it.
Yeah. Every single time. Every damn time. Funny that you had like a brown corduroy kind of sofa growing up. In my house, it was like a really weird off gray color. It was so ugly.
Mom. I didn't mean to call your fashion ugly.
I mean, look, let's be real. The time frame that I grew up in and the decorating choices that my parents made in their house while I was growing up was insane. At one point, they had the top half of the wall was painted gold, and there was like a border then around the middle, like a wallpaper border, and then the bottom half of the wall was painted blue, like a royal blue. Like,
that's,
it was
amazing. That reminds me of my grandparents' house at that time, too. Anyway, let's move on to the last bit of news we have. And I'm going to say this is the fun YouTube video of the week. Seagulls, Stop It Now, from Bad Lip Reading of The Empire Strikes Back. What do you think of this, Danya?
I have had this almost on repeat constantly since they released it. I love the Bad Lip Reading guys anyway. I think they're fantastic.
Yeah, no, it's nonstop. Like, this has been on loop at work and everything. I even made ringtones out of the video.
Run,
is something.
Run, if you run now, jump.
Yeah, you can wear me as a backpack. anyway, if you haven't seen it, check it out. It'll be in our show notes. It'll be linked on our website too, resistanceradio.net. So check it out there.
So fun.
Definitely fun. I know this week we deviated from our standard show organization of just spotlight, you know, news and spotlight topic, but this is really just so that we can get caught up on all the news for you guys, because it was all pretty relevant news this week. I expect the same to be next week, and then the week after that, we'll be recording after we see Rogue One. And that will be our kind of review of it. As always, thank you all for listening to another episode of Resistance Radio. Feel free to reach out to us on Twitter at @rradiopodcast or on Facebook at facebook.com/resistanceradio. Also, if you are interested in being one of our new co-hosts to lend your opinions or your voice in discussing about the Star Wars universe, go ahead and contact us at contact@resistanceradio.net. Again, there are some stipulations. Make sure you have a microphone and a way to record yourself on the computer. If you don't know how, feel free to reach out. We can tell you anyway. We're pretty good at being helpful. As always, I am Mikey B.
And I'm Donya.
Thank you all for listening. We'll talk to you next week.
May the force be with you. Bye.
I rebel.
Nothing I could do but yell when these birds attack me. When I tried to run, I fell, and then these kids start laughing.